Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And good evening. If you're in the PM, which I think the entire United States is in the PM, then this is good evening. The show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as 1798Part2.org and RepublicReview.org, not just MobiStripPress.com. I'm sorry. Anyway, you are listening to the only show that provides you and America the only solution that will get the federal government into compliance with the Constitution. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And so I also have the phonetics for you. It's at 215-TOP-TALK if you would like to call in to have a conversation or you got a question or anything like that. Anyway, I wanted to let you know I was going to put some stuff up. I've got a lot of work to do, but I think I've mentioned that I'm working on an article, and I know 28 pages is a long article, but this is an academic article. I'm really trying to provide you with evidence, not just asserting that this nation was Christian. And so I'll explain this a little bit before I go through my typical beginning show tirade. And the reason that I call this nation Christian is because every single state in the Republic was a Christian state because they had state-sponsored churches. Anglican was the primary church, but every single state in the Union had its own state-sponsored church. They were taking taxes and providing that to the churches so that they could take care of compassionate services for the community. What is compassionate services? Well, it's typically the welfare program, education, and that type of thing. And so, well, what else could that be? Healthcare. As a matter of fact, why is it that they have St. John's and St. Mary's and St. Joseph's? The church is used to do all of these types of compassionate services. But as the government started creating hindrances with the church, and when they became actually, what's a good word for it? They became hostile towards Christianity at the turn of the century. It became obvious that the church needed to start changing what it could do and what it couldn't do. And as it went through, I mean, the state kind of stepped in, and in some ways, the churches abdicated their responsibility. But nevertheless, I provide you an academic argument as to where you can find the facts on, you know, how this nation was a Christian nation and how it migrated into a godless secular nation, and that the federal government has actually erected a church without building one, without putting brick and mortar together. And I provide you with, I believe, enough evidence to actually give you what you need to understand so that we no longer have to dance around this subject. It's kind of like it's been the invisible elephant in the room. Everybody knows, they just can't walk across the room because there's this big thing that nobody knows about. They just can't walk through it. And so we kind of have to walk around it. And I'm just telling you, it is a big elephant. And that elephant is the godless secular church that is in our lives that the federal government has established in violating the First Amendment. I actually have a really special show for you because in acknowledging the fact that I have picked up more and more people in this audience growing, I'm going to kind of go through these iterations. Even though I may have read some of the ratification debates before, I think it is paramount that I kind of go through those again because I do have a lot of content for people to go through. And if it is a few months old, then some people just have a hard time being able to download and listen to every single show that I've got. Even though I tell you, you really should, I do understand that we all have time constraints and we all have real hard limitations. So I will get into some meat today, and I hope you're hungry, because if you've come to eat at the trough, we definitely have a trough here for you, full of food and things ready for you to consume. And so with that, let me kind of go through my typical, what do we call that, groveling. And I will say that if you have a computer, if you have a phone, then you can help. And as a matter of fact, there's all sorts of ways you can find to help, and all sorts of ways you can start running into people like-minded or what have you, that you can actually start working with others. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned it yesterday, and I'll mention it again, because one of the things I want to put up on my on my Reclaiming the Republic webpage, I have a sponsorships and contributions page, something like that. And I identify those who are sponsoring and those who are contributing and so forth. And I'm really bad at updating that, but I've got to get to that. And again, that's, this article is keeping me from that. But what I'm going to do is I'll put the Constitution Club up there. I'm going to put the We the People Foundation up there. I'm going to put the Constitution Association up there. And I'm going to put up Red Pill University up there, as well as the Freedom Force International. These are the organizations that are, you know, behind Republic Review. And as I start getting more, I'll start putting those up there as well. And I'll have links to all of these different pages and so forth. So if you're interested in learning about these organizations that are getting behind me, then you can actually learn for yourself, you know, about these organizations. And like I said, the nice thing about the Constitution Club is they're already organized. They've got, I don't know how many thousands of members out there. And what you can do is just join for free and actually start engaging, finding people in your local communities, start going through their content. They're putting up Republic Review content there as well. And so you will probably find that it is very enlightening, and it can really help contribute to, I think, some of the stuff that you may be very interested in learning about. And as well as finding people that might actually be living very close to you and start working with those people. Anyway, so if you want to help, then you just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I actually have work. If you're in a different state, as a matter of fact, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what state you're in, I can still use help. And so by all means, just please send me an email, and I would be happy, very happy to enlist your, and I'll be very, very, what's a good word for it? I'll be very guarded of how I ask you to spend your time. I do understand, you know, family comes first and all those types of things. So don't worry, I'm not going to be that unreasonable leader, manager, or friend that's going to try to impose upon your time all the time. And I just need to know, you know, because it happens at some points in time when I need something and I kind of need it by a certain time. If you can't do it, then by all means, let me know, because once I've given you something to do, this happens. If you can't get it done, you got to let me know as soon as possible, because if I'm really depending on some information, then I'll either have to do it myself or throw it to somebody else or what have you. And that's, you know, where what we call triage and crisis management and being able to, you know, do schedule conflict and mitigation, all that type of stuff. And so be happy to engage you for all of those who are really willing and looking, you know, looking for something more to do. There were a few things in the news that I kind of wanted to get into that, as I always do, because I look in the news and I do find that there are things that are worthy of being brought up, but not one thing in the news. I got to say this for the record. There is no thing in the news. There is no comment or even any type of hint that the federal government is going to disband any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And if you understand what tyranny is, or tyrannical roles and powers, there are arbitrary roles and powers that the federal government has taken upon itself. In other words, the states are the only arbiters that can allow and delegate to the federal government what they can and what they cannot do. just to be clear. And so if the federal government takes upon itself these powers, roles, responsibilities, and so forth, then it is tyranny, because they were never given that. And you show me in the Constitution where they have that ability to just, you know, assume anything that they want to assume. Because if you have any kind of understanding of the Revolutionary War, the framers were very, very sensitive to the federal government being able to assume any type of roles. They wanted to make sure that they were limited and that they would stay out of their lives, like the British government was violating a lot of their rights, you know, as far as Englishmen, because they had those Bill of Rights that they were expecting to be honored. And of course, they tossed those to the side, which is what caused the Revolutionary War. So anyway, I know I'm going to be coming up on a hard break here. So what I'm going to do is I will highlight some of the news for you as soon as we get back. And then I will actually jump into these not the Federalist Papers, but the ratification debates. And these are going to be the Virginia ratification. These are the highlights that I think are very pertinent, things that you really need to understand and things that are worth repeating so that they reinforce the limited and defined roles of the federal government. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And one of the things I think is really interesting that came out today, and I'm going to put this in context because India is not a culture that really sees, like Christianity, identify sin within, you know, human acts and so forth. However, the interesting thing is that India has just decriminalized homosexual acts. And apparently, I guess they considered those crimes before, and now they're not. And it seems like this is, if you didn't know, it's just the same thing with the abortion movement and all of the American debauchery. There are lots of organizations that are trying to promote our debauchery to go worldwide. It's kind of like the same thing with global governance. It is the same thing with debauchery. And so I find it sad to see that these nations are basically kowtowing to these agendas. So it's really unfortunate. So that's bad news. Some other news that I don't think you are aware of, but Facebook, nobody has ever heard of a Facebook data center, right? Or a cloud or what have you. But they're actually going to set one up in Singapore. Why Singapore and why not America? Because if you haven't heard, Twitter, Facebook, and all of the social media giants are getting real pressure from the federal government because the federal government is looking to going after them for censorship. And I told you that the federal government does not have the constitutional powers to do that. But what they can do is they can use taxation as an incentive to getting these companies to behave better. So you can heavily tax the crud out of them and say, you know what, if you don't want to pay these taxes, then all you've got to do is embrace and promote and be a champion for individual liberty, individual sovereignty, open dialogue, and, you know, have reasonable censorships on things like, because you got to remember, way back when, they actually did believe in censorship for, you know, sexuality and those types of things, because it was a enlightened society, and society that is enlightened does not pursue things of the carnal nature. They try to understand that, you know, to achieve a higher level of enlightenment, you have to put those things. Enlightenment is about discipline and, you know, overcoming those types of animalistic needs and so forth, whether they be taking drugs. And it just seems like we have completely turned around from an enlightened society, and our school system, as I've said many a times before, is promoting the youth in getting engaged in addictive and destructive behavior. And an enlightened society does not do those things. So anyway, I think it's interesting that they're deciding to set up that data center in Singapore, because Singapore is, you know, it's definitely a free market area, but it has a lot different perspectives towards, you know, that type of thing. I mean, you can't spit on the sidewalk there. You get caned, right? But apparently you do have a lot more privileges and liberties with certain things there as well. And so anyway, if you haven't heard, Rubio and Jones kind of went at it. And it seems to me like the government is going to look at not only just censorship from a social media standpoint and trying to make sure that they're really going to try to be the umpires of speech. In other words, they're literally going to be stepping on and parking. They're going to build a nest on the First Amendment and take full ownership of it. And I do not like this. We're going right down that same path that Adams with sedition and so forth. And so it doesn't matter if it bodes in the conservative advantage at this point in time. It is just a matter of time for the tables to turn, and everybody will be highlighted that happens to be a patriot. I know for a fact, and I mentioned this yesterday, that it's only a matter of time for me to be called, because I'm a constitutionalist, somebody's going to come after me and try to call me a white supremacist and a racist, because I believe in the principles and I believe in the hard, fast contract of our Constitution, and I truly support and defend and will do everything I can to protect our constitutional republic as both a citizen, as a retired Marine, and so forth. And we all have that obligation. If we don't, we will rue the day when we lose our Constitution and our republic. One more thing to talk about real quick. You know, it's just like, it's that time of year. We're going to start getting poked in the eye. We're going to hear about these elitist athletes that are going to tell us how they're exercising free speech by taking a knee on the sidelines or whatever because they feel like they've been oppressed, because the millions of dollars just isn't enough, that the owners are making too much money, whatever their gripes are. What they're truly doing is, because these are social justice warriors, social justice is literally the promotion of socialism, trying to get an equality of outcome, both, you know, whether that be in the legal sense, whether that be in a financial sense. It is about the redistribution of wealth. It is communism, and socialism is the tip of that spear. So anyway, it's that time of year we can, it's all start kind of ramping up on these concepts of social justice warriors, and you know, whether we consider that free speech or not. I actually consider this, what they are doing has nothing to do with speech, and it has everything to do with the freedom of religion, because this is a religious ideology that they are supporting. And so, as if you need to go back and listen to my January and February podcast when I talk about that, because I give you a really good detail of how this is a religious issue and not a speech issue. And so I another thing I want to point out, because I was going to go through this Google leadership and so forth, but I'll pass over that, where somebody is basically calling them kind of equivalent to the Burning Man out in the desert. But it seems like the Democrats are really utilizing the boycott. They're boycotting In-N-Out Burger. They're going after anybody and everybody that promotes Christianity. The reason they're going after In-N-Out, because they have scriptures. I mean, this has been a long-term known thing that the In-N-Out restaurant has been very Christian. They're actually the highest paid. They pay their employees the highest percentage or highest salary or wage compared to all of the rest of them. And it's just amazing that the Democrats go into this boycott frenzy when somebody has scriptures on their cups or you know, they're promoting Christianity because it's just offensive to them. That's where we are as a society. I hope you understand we do not have much more to turn around this corner before we really are facing that precipice where we're either going to have to fall or claw our way back. And so we all have access to who donates to these communists, to these Democrats. And so it's, why aren't we declaring war on all the donors who are donating to these folks? That's something you ought to consider. Go into your state, look at who's promoting and supporting these Democrats, and then just start calling for boycotts across your state. Because obviously, In-N-Out is not an international or a national fast food chain, because it's a family-owned chain. And so anyway, let me get into, because I got 2 minutes for this segment, and that gives me two whole segments, so I can get into some really good meat for you today. But before I get into these, I like to ask this standing question before I read and cite any documents from our founders, our framers, I should say. Are the words in our founding documents that I am citing the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, bureaucrats, mainstream media, are those the words of deceit and lies? That's the question we have to start asking ourselves. So when these men made these public comments during the debates, when these men wrote articles describing the Constitution, describing the Declaration of Independence, and these founding documents, were they lying to us? I don't think so. But that's a question you have to answer. Now, my first and foremost, and this is my favorite because it is as concise as can be from Madison, and in Madisonian terms, this is the typical Madison because he gets right to the point. Excuse me. And he says right here, this is on page 59 of the Virginia Ratification Debates. If you actually cut and pasted that document and put it into a Word document, you go to Avalon Constitution Project. Actually, let me pull it up because I think it is Cornell University. And I've got it right here. It is Yale. My bad. So if you go to Avalon Law at Yale EDU, you can find all of these documents, the ratification debates and so forth. Now, this is not the complete and comprehensive list. The University of Wisconsin actually at the DHRC, and I forget what they changed their name to, but the DHRC was the Documentation History of the Ratification of the Constitution. That's a mouthful. And they actually have the newspaper clippings. They have everything that was associated going on at that snapshot of time when that state was ratifying the Constitution. They had letters of correspondence. They literally documented the entire history of this. So they give you such detail and such perspective of what each state was going through at the time. But anyway, let me get into this. See, I just went down that rat hole and couldn't get into the first quote. So I'm at a heartbreak, folks. So we'll be right back. I've got two more segments of throwing some meat at you. So we'll be right back with the ratification debates from Virginia. So please stay tuned. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And so, again, this is the short one that actually it comes out of a paragraph, but it is so concise that this one sentence or portion of a sentence actually says it all. And it's, quote, "The powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction." Period. And so, the reason this is all important, and the reason the ratification debates are important, and what Madison just said right there, is because what he is saying, he is using these facts to get the state to basically ratify a constitution. And the term ratify is the formal acceptance of a contract. So as he is describing the limitations of this constitution, the limitations of the federal government that this constitution creates, he is basically adding and or amending to the Constitution further clarifications, further definitions of what this means, what that means, and so forth. Now, this may be a generalized statement, but it goes to lending to the state of the important information that they need to know so that they can, you know, ratify this or not, because they want to know, well, how limited is it? And he basically kind of clarifies that. So each of these statements that I'm going to read primarily are from the Federalists, who are promoting and telling, not just telling and promoting, they're defining the Constitution. They're basically clarifying what this clause means and what that clause means. And so this next one is from Mr. Lee of Westmoreland on page 114. I say that this new system shows, in stronger terms than words could declare, that the liberties of the people are secure. It goes in the principle that all power is in the people, and that rulers have no powers but what are enumerated in that paper. When a question arises with respect to the legality of any power exercised or assumed by Congress, it is plain on the side of governed. Is it enumerated in the Constitution? If it be, it is legal and just. It is otherwise arbitrary and unconstitutional. So what he just said was, you know, you have to ask yourself two questions. Is this power that is being exercised, is it enumerated in the Constitution? And if it is, it's legal and a just law. If it is otherwise, in other words, if it is not, if this exercised or assumed power by Congress is not enumerated in the Constitution, then it is arbitrary and unconstitutional. And he goes on and says, candor must confess that it is indefinitely more attentive to the liberties of the people than any state government. And that's because a lot of state governments didn't have hard defined and enumerated constitutions. As a matter of fact, during the Bill of Rights discussions, when Madison started doing the due diligence like Madison, and only Madison would do, he actually pulled in all of the state constitutions, and much to his surprise, almost all of them didn't have a Bill of Rights, and hardly any of them had the right to bear arms and so forth and so on. And so as he was getting ready to do this this Bill of Rights amendments to the Constitution, to the U.S. Constitution, he stood up and poked all of the state representatives from both the Senate and the House in the eye and said, look, you know, we're going to be doing something that even your state doesn't even have. So, and he points them all out. And that's what a class act Madison really was. So this next one, again, is from Mr. Lee of Westmoreland, and this is also on page 114 and 115, and it says, quote, the powers reserved to the people were but an inconsiderable exception from what were given to their rulers, but that in the federal government, the rulers of the people were vested with certain defined powers, and that what were not delegated to those rulers were retained by the people. The consequence of this, he said, was that the limited powers were only an exception to those which rested in the people, and that they knew what they had given up and could be in no danger. He exemplified the proposition in a familiar manner. He observed that if a man delegated certain powers to an agent, it would be an insult upon common sense to suppose the agent could legally transact any business for his principal, which was not contained in the common whereby the powers were delegated. But that if a man empowered his representative or agent to transact all his business except certain enumerated parts, the clear result was the agent could lawfully transact every possible part of his principal's business except the enumerated parts, and added that these plain propositions were sufficient to demonstrate the inutility and folly, were it permitted to use this expression, the Bill of Rights. And so here's this perspective in Virginia, and I forget the gentleman, we'll get to it down the road here pretty quick, when I think it's in North Carolina, there's a gentleman that basically stands up and says, you know, have you ever had a power of attorney? And if the power of attorney stipulates one very specific thing for somebody to sell a piece of property in a given state, that doesn't mean that you, because it gave you this implied power to sell that property in that one particular state, you can imply that you can sell all this person's property. No. It is very specific and limited to that. And there were no such thing as implied powers. There's no such thing as implied powers within a power of attorney. And that's basically the same thing. And they were alluding to this fact that the Constitution was very similar to a power of attorney because it was only delegating very specific powers. And when he put it into that context, I mean, I think that really helps clarify because most people understand the power of attorney and what can happen if you have a general power of attorney and when you have a explicit or specific power of attorney or power of attorney. And so this next one, which is on page 152, this is Mr. George Nicholas. And he's got some really brilliant quotes. And this is one that he's talking about what they were calling at the time the dreaded clause. And that dreaded clause was, and he quotes it, so let me get into this. And he says, this dreaded clause runs in the following words. To make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. The committee will perceive that the Constitution had enumerated all powers which the general government should have, but did not say how they would be exercised. It therefore, in this clause, tells how they shall be exercised. Does it give any new power? I say not. Suppose it had been inserted at the end of every power. They should have the power to make laws and carry the power into execution. Would have this increased their powers? If therefore it could not have increased their powers, if placed at the end of each power, it could not increase them at the end of all. This clause only enables them to carry into execution the powers given to them, but gives them no additional power. And actually, the magic here, as I editorialize, is the listing of, in this clause, it says, into execution the foregoing powers, which are a part of Section 8, those listed powers. It wasn't saying in any and every power that the government feels whimsically desirable or that the government feels that it might be, you know, suitable by other governments, so we'll just assume the same thing. There's no generalities or any portals within that clause. And so it also goes by, I think this is Nicholas as well, he says right after this, and he goes, but it is objected to for want of a Bill of Rights. It is a principle universally agreed upon that all powers not given are retained, whereby the Constitution, the general government, has general powers for any purpose. Its powers are absolute, where it has powers with some exceptions. They are absolute only to those exceptions. In either case, the people retain what is not conferred on the general government, as it is by their positive grant that it has any of its powers. In England, all disputes between the king and the people recurrence has it had the enumerated rights of the people to determine. Are the rights in dispute secured? Are they included in the Magna Carta, Bill of Rights, and etc.? If not, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress cannot meddle with it. Because there it is right there. And I think that just that last two words, or two sentences, is the disputed right enumerated? And if not, Congress cannot meddle with it. I think that kind of sums it all up. And they say this ad nauseum. In other words, they go on and on and keep on saying these exact same things. And so how is it that people are missing these details and these facts? It's because nobody has ever created the legal binding association of the ratification debates to the Constitution. I'm at a heartbreak, so we're going to be right back for our last segment after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, this next one is another George Nicholas, and this one is kind of interesting because he gets into why the Constitution doesn't dictate law. But, sir, this Constitution is defective because, and he's basically repeating what an anti-federalist had said earlier. He says, but, sir, this Constitution is defective because the common law is not declared to be in force. What would have been the consequence if it had? It would be immutable. But now it can be changed. So, in other words, because it didn't dictate to the states that they have to use common law, it didn't dictate what law to use. And so he says, what would have been the consequence if it had? It would be immutable. And what that means is that the states would be forced to use a very specific legal system, common law. But the common law is not excluded by not including it either. There is nothing in that paper, or let me see here. But the common law is not excluded. There's nothing in that paper to warrant the assertion as to the exclusion of a jury from the vicinage, he has mistaken the fact. The legislature may direct a jury to come from the vicinage, but the gentleman says that by this Constitution, they have no power to make laws to define crimes and prescribe punishments, and that consequently we are not free from torture. Treason against the United States is defined in the Constitution. And see, this is where he's going into some of the laws that the federal government actually has jurisdiction over. And these are the only laws they have jurisdiction over. He doesn't mention counterfeiting, though, but that is one of the laws. But I go on. And that the forfeiture limited to the life of a person attained. In other words, the punishment for treason is hanging. So in other words, if you commit treason, you're going to die because it clearly defines in the Constitution what the punishment is for that. And so Congress have the power to define and punish piracies and felonies committed upon the high sea and offenses against the laws of nations. But they cannot define or prescribe the punishment of any other crime whatever without violating the Constitution. So I'm going to stop right there. What he just said is the same thing Jefferson says in the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, him and Madison. What he just said is that the federal government has no jurisdiction of defining or creating any new laws. If so, it is violating the Constitution. So if the federal government says that a particular drug is illegal, then they're violating the Constitution. If the federal government says that, let me see, what would be a good one that they kind of go after? Because there's all sorts of laws that the Department of Justice kind of goes after. And so gun running. And even though these are laws that just make common sense between the states, and the states actually have these same laws, gun running between states, you know, kidnapping. These are violations of the Constitution because the federal government has no jurisdiction. These are state jurisdiction laws, period. The federal government was never delegated by the states to give them the ability to do interstate crimes or anything like that. Show me the amendment in the Constitution that gives the federal government the authority and power over these things. They don't have it. And so he goes on, if we had no security against torture, but our Declaration of Rights, we might be tortured tomorrow, for it has been repeatedly infringed and disregarded. A Bill of Rights is only an acknowledgement of the pre-existing claims in the people. They belong to us as much as if they had been inserted in the Constitution. But it is said that if it be doubtful, the possibility of dispute ought to be precluded, admitting it were proper for the convention to have inserted a Bill of Rights, it is not proper here to propose it as the condition of our accession to the Union. In other words, he was saying that they could have included a Bill of Rights when they were writing the Constitution, but it is not proper for the body of Virginia to basically assert that they have to include this for us to agree, because they can't stipulate the conditions. Either they accept the contract or they reject the contract. It was basically a binary position that they had, yes or no, and that was it. Would you reject the government for its omission, dissolve the Union, and bring miseries on yourself and posterity? I hope the gentleman does not oppose it on the ground solely. Is there another reason? He said that it is not only the general wish of this state, but all the states to have a Bill of Rights. If it be so, where is the difficulty of having this done by a way of a subsequent amendment? We shall find other states willing to accord with their own favorite wish. The gentleman last up that the power of legislation includes everything a general power of legislation does, but this is a special power of legislation. Therefore, it does not contain the plenitude of powers which he imagines. They can only legislate in any case, but those particularly enumerated. No gentleman who is a friend to the government ought to withhold his assent from it for this reason. Now, something that I think is really, you know, important that I go back on, and he was talking about the Bill of Rights and the favorite wishes and so forth, something that you did not know, because one of the things that all of the states rejected in the ratification debates, or at least they verbally rejected, and they inserted their own amendment to demand that they have religious tests. So in Article 6, I think it's Section 3, there should be no religious test for any person seeking public service. Well, all of the states, they didn't like that. Every single state said they demand that they have religious tests so that they can, you know, vet their people. That was one requested amendment that was unanimously requested by the states that did not get included. In other words, they did not get rid of that one clause. And therefore, Madison, and I think his wisdom, actually prevailed the day in ensuring that those types of vetting processes could not be used. And the reason being is today we are actually, and I've said this before, our school system, our indoctrination system, the national indoctrination system is teaching kids today that anybody that is identified as a Christian, anybody that's identified as a constitutionalist is a far right wacko and they can't be trusted and don't vote for them. And so we're basically helping ourselves identify as a politician is running. Oh yes, I'm a staunch Christian, and you know it drives everything I do. When you say that, the kids that are coming out of the school system completely understand who you are, what you are, and they won't vote for you because you're making that type of an assertion. And I truly believe that it has gotten to that point where the secular progressives that are dictating the curriculum in our education system have, you know, created literally that type of an education curriculum that the kids are learning that you are the enemy if you feel like, you know, Christianity or morals are important, because you're going to step on their rights to have a good time, because really that's all kids care about, right? You remember when you were a kid? I do. And I remember I wanted to have a good time. You know, school sucked. You know, going and playing, that was fun when I was a little kid. And as I got older, you know, it was music, playing music, that was fun. You only wanted to do what you wanted to do, and you dreaded doing those things like learning math, history, and those types of things. And then as I got older, I realized, boy, I sure love this history stuff. So things change. But unfortunately, when you're a young child, you do not have providence. You do not have the wisdom necessary in making the best decisions for yourself. That's why kids don't choose their, you know, what's going to be on their menu for dinner, or it would probably be ice cream and cookies and cake and all those types of things every night, because that's what they like and that's what they want. I doubt that it would be Brussels sprouts, broccoli, you know, lima beans, you know, and maybe liver, or you know, the types of foods that are really good for you. I'm sure that the kids would not be including those types of things in their menu if they were allowed to choose for themselves. That's why we have parents. And it's the same thing with the federal government, my friends. That is the child government. They do not get to choose what they do. It has been given to them via the Constitution what they are supposed to do. And so it is really simple. I don't have enough time to go into the next one, but I don't know if you've noticed, but George Nicholas was a very astute and very smart person. But back to this child government thing. The children have been running amok, and the states are the parents, and it's time for the parents to basically stand up and take control. And I will tell you, when we do this, the kids will, you know, try to, you know, scream, whine. They'll try to create diversions. They're very smart at this. They've been doing it for a long time. And the person that's really behind all of this has been doing it for even a longer time. And I am telling you that they will recognize that their fun and their run is over, and they will have no other choice, because they recognize that the parents are the parents, but they're not going to roll over easily. And I am GR, Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. So I hope you join me. Just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. God bless. I'll be back tomorrow. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.